Today's podcast is brought to you by our awesome patrons at patreon.com and by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Saratok. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Take advantage of this special promotion. Go to audibletrial.com/Saratok and download your free audiobook today.
You're listening to Saratok. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on, let me change some words here. All right, ready? Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held. Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Welcome to Saratok. I'm Sarah Austin. In the studio with me today, my wife, Becca. Today on the show, we are going to immerse ourselves in the struggle happening right now in the state of Texas. We'll speak to a representative from Equality Texas to get a broad view over what's happening in the state legislature with respect to transgender rights in the public forum, in private business, and in schools. Then later in the program, we will be joined by Andy Hutton. Andy is a parent who is heavily involved in a struggle for the rights of a transgender student at Walnut Springs Elementary in Dripping Springs, Texas. It is our hope through these conversations that we highlight the need to come together as a global community to fight fear, hate, and discrimination in all its forms, wherever it forms. Along the way, we will provide you with some information on how to get involved specifically with Texas. We know that this stuff can and likely will come up in every state and truly all over the world, and we pledge to support Texas in any way we can. One day, when it comes to our school district, or city, or state, or wherever you are in the world, we will need Texas to support us too. We watched as Indiana Governor Mike Pence's Religious Freedom Act and Pat McCrory's North Carolina House Bill 2 triggered an economic backlash, from boycotts to intense pressure from the business sector. In North Carolina, I've seen a variety of economic estimates, anywhere from $560 million to nearly $1 billion in losses, from canceled sports and music events, conventions, to companies moving out of the state or canceling their plans to expand and develop. Now, it's difficult to imagine that any governor or lawmaker out there would want to come anywhere near this style of law, and yet, Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, along with bill sponsor Senator Lois Kolkhorst, introduced Senate Bill 6, which they are calling the, quote, Texas Privacy Act, and we are going to call Just Another Excuse to Discriminate Act. Lou Weaver is the Transgender Programs Coordinator for Equality Texas, and he joins us on the phone now. Lou, welcome to Saratok.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. It's great to have you be a part of this conversation. First, tell us a little about yourself and your role there with Equality Texas.
Sure. I live in Houston, Texas. I'm an out queer transgender man. I'm the Transgender Programs Coordinator, which means I get to go across the state of Texas and help find other transgender voices to elevate what their stories are, give them resources so they're able to be good messengers, good storytellers, to help them and find the stories that the people that are ready, willing, and able to have these conversations and get them into the front of the media. We have several projects running down here right now. I have the Trans Visible Project, where we're showing everyday trans folks with their families, with their friends, And talking about their stories and how they're navigating life, how the parents have reacted when their children have come out. And then we have hashtag Trans Tuesday. So every Tuesday we push out a video or a blog or, from a transgender person and their family telling who they are, telling their story so that we can show that trans folks are doing the exact same thing as everybody else is doing. And that's really an important narrative that we want to get out there right now.
Yeah, that's very normalizing.
Exactly. I mean, we're normal people.
Absolutely. Let's start with this proposed legislation, Senate Bill 6. It's completely coincidence that we are recording this on the day in which we honor the work and memory of one of the greatest champions of equality in our nation's history, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick invoked his words, quote, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent on things that matter." This legislation is unquestionably one of the things that matters. It's the right thing to do. Well, we agree at part of that. I would use those same sentiments back against that bill. We have been silent for too long. If you could, give us a little overview of what this legislation looks like.
Sure. So Senate Bill 6 is saying that it's the Women's Privacy Act. They're saying that women and young girls need to be protected when they're in gendered spaces. Like restrooms, locker rooms, changing rooms, for example. And then they need to be protected from people who are out to do harm. Ironically, we already have bills on out there saying that, you know, it is illegal to walk into those spaces in order to commit an attack of any sort. So really what this bill is doing, it's a thinly disguised attempt to discriminate, as you said earlier. And what they're doing is, and what they said is, well, this isn't about business, trying to get away from the business angle. This is about other things. This is about our schools. This is about sporting events and places like that. And what we're seeing is it really is an attack on our youth as well.
And later in the broadcast today, we are actually going to speak with a parent in a local Texas school district who's kind of battling through a local fight there for a transgender child in the school. I think one of the things that sets this particular piece of legislation apart from some of the other ones we've seen is just how unapologetically blatant it is. You know, it doesn't try to hide under the pretense of religious freedom. In fact, the first few lines of the bill, and I've got the most recent text as it was filed, "An act relating to the regulations and policies for entering or using a bathroom or changing facility, authorizing a civil penalty and increasing criminal penalties." Were you surprised by the boldness of this effort?
Not really. Dan Patrick has long been fighting for a higher office. He is catering to his base, and that's what we're up against. And we're up against these folks who really have made a priority to stigmatize, first marginalize, and to continue to attack the LGBTQ community. And right now, for the past probably 2 years, they've been focusing on the trans and gender nonconforming communities. And that's exactly what this bill is targeting. Somebody who's not feminine enough. And somebody, our lesbian sisters who are masculine offender, or even cisgender women who have a masculine offender presentation. And those that don't cater to femininity as it's prescribed by quote unquote mainstream society.
You know, yes, he was talking before the bill was even filed. This just kind of blew my mind that he said it would specifically ban transgender women from using women's restrooms. In the beginning, it was specifically leaving out trans men. And he said in an interview that he didn't want it to include transgender men using men's rooms because men can defend themselves. Now, none of that language looks like it's made it into the bill as it's been filed, but the absence of the trans masculine in this conversation always makes me scream and cuss. So I'd like to give you the opportunity to scream and cuss a little bit from your own personal perspective.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that because it's hard in these fights. And obviously, I walk through the world with a lot of privilege as a transgender man, and being seen as a man, and how my role is shifted in society and how I navigate society. It's irritating on several levels. One, being told they have to protect themselves. As a strong feminist, I think that's a load of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And it caters into the fear-based mongering that people have. Two, when we're talking about, the erasure of trans people, and we're only the erasure of trans men,
mm-hmm.
and we're only targeting transgender women, who, as we know, are frequently more marginalized than other folks, especially transgender women of color,
mm-hmm.
that it's again targeting them and saying that they are perpetrators of a crime, or that they're suspected to be, that they're sexual deviants, sexual perverts. And it makes me want to pull my hair out. The other thing is, if you're going to talk about children, which we are, we're talking about women and children and their privacy and how they need to be protected. Why do we only care about little girls and we don't care about little boys?
Yes.
I mean, we've seen just as many people mm-hmm. who are taking advantage of young men who cannot protect themselves. And this is not coming into the conversation, and nobody's talking about those young boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to reshape this narrative. We need to have a real conversation about what this is about. Because, as you know, we have these bills in over 200 municipalities, several states, and we have not seen an uprising crime. And these crimes are not happening in a public restroom.
Right.
And so it really is just fear-based mongering, trying to get somebody riled up, trying to get men riled up, thinking that they need to protect their women.
Yeah.
But again, nobody thinks about the young boys, and we do have to take them into consideration. We have to take into consideration the fact that, of course, we're targeting transgender women that are already marginalized, that already are, living in that fringe of society, just because this rhetoric continues.
I couldn't say it better myself. Let's talk about the economy. And I know, like you said, that they're trying to move the conversation away from that. And yet we've seen what we've seen in North Carolina. I remember in October, we shared a news story here on the show about a coalition of small businesses who were, had written a letter and had come together to speak out against a state law like this. And that they're looking at a possible annual losses between $1 billion and $8.5 billion, that from the Texas Association of Business. What response have you been seeing and hearing from Texas businesses?
Texas businesses don't want this. They know what's going to come down the pipeline. They know, they've been watching what happened in North Carolina. They already have the rumblings. We are a huge place, a state. We thrive on business interaction. We thrive on conventions coming here and on sports. And I'm pretty sure Jerry Jones wants a Super Bowl up there in Dallas in the near future. We have the Final Four coming here soon. We don't want these things being taken out of here. And here in Texas, we are very adamant about the fact that we are Texans, and we are very proud of that. And to have the thought that our brand is going to be destroyed, purged, is just not sitting well with our business community, because we do want people to come here. We are a huge state. We have a lot of things going on. And so the business community is up in arms, but then we have Dan Patrick saying, oh, these are wonky numbers. These aren't real. All of these types of things, just in any way, shape or form, saying that, this is just malarkey and we don't have to deal with it.
I don't know how you can look at North Carolina and say, oh, that won't happen here. I just don't know how you can even make that stretch.
Well, we do have our own special brand of crazy, as I like to say. And we think that because we are Texas, we are really, everything's bigger in Texas, including our egos. So we don't know that we don't believe that anybody wouldn't come here.
Well, we do give
so
Texas a lot of
delusional.
Crap. So. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like
I didn't grow up here, so,
like a lot of the country, after major Democratic losses in the election, the Texas legislature in both the upper and lower houses now is roughly 2-1 Republican majority, and coupled with a Republican governor. Given that Texas stands to suffer a devastating negative impact, regardless of what the lieutenant governor thinks, and what you know of the current lawmakers, What do you think? How likely is this thing to actually pass and get signed into law?
So it's the Senate, where this bill has been introduced, is highly GOP. The chances of it coming through there are very are likely. Mm-hmm. Dan Patrick has said, if you don't help me with my bill, I'm not going to help you with your bill.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's really attacking this on all fronts and saying, hey, this needs to happen. So our friends are in the House, and that's what we're looking at. And we're doing everything we can. And the business community is coming out. We've formed coalitions to be able to say, hey, you know, we need you to be talking. We need the coalitions to be building as much of a wall against all of this rhetoric against LGBTQ folks, and in this case, trans and not gender nonconforming folks, as it's coming down the pipeline. So we're hoping that this doesn't happen. But at the same time, we're not just watching this bill. We're waiting for the other bills. There are Senate Bill 242, Senate Bill 92 that we're looking at that we just need to be mindful of. And we have to be very vigilant about watching everything that's out there, because just because Senate Bill 6 doesn't make it, there might be RFRAs, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act coming down, that we need to be aware of. So this is the big one, but this might also be one of those that they're like, here, this is shiny, go look at this.
Right.
There might actually be something else.
So you mentioned that your organization is, you know, working with lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, trying to talk this up and get the proper information out there. Have you started, or is there in the community, a public campaign to try to drive community engagement and get citizens to reach out to their elected officials directly? I mean, that, you know, I think I look back to HERO in the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, and one of that was just a misinformation campaign that was won by the opposition that really came down to just misinformation in there. And so I just wondered if that was something that you guys are, you know, working to try to get deep into the community.
Yes, we're working on several different levels. The grassroots level as well as the organizational level, to get out the message, to have people call, to have people write letters, to have people engaged with their elected officials, their local business owners, to be able to say, this bill matters to me, this bill is going to affect my life, and to have a lot of different folks say that this bill matters to me, not just the LGBTQ community, but for a lot of people to be able to say, I care about this. I have friends that are LGBTQ. I have friends that this matters to. I don't want this because it's bad for my business. I don't want this. I don't care what reason they say they don't want this. We have to not want this.
Right. And now we always like to kind of wrap up and give you an opportunity to tell us where we can learn more about you and your organization, what things that we can do to support you. How can we get involved from afar?
I guess spreading the word really helps us. Sharing with people, telling people like why this matters, that this fight is going on, but also don't ignore the fight in your own state.
Yes.
North Carolina still has a fight. I believe Tennessee is going to have a fight. But always being talking to elected officials, and, you know, anything that you can do to support us, if you have Texas friends, family, get them involved. If you can, you know, we will be having remote phone banks. If you like a phone bank, if you like to do anything, you know, grab a phone, help call our people, because we're not just calling electeds, but we're calling people in those areas to remind them to call their electeds. So this is a multi-pronged campaign, and anything, if you have social media skills, or if you like, if you enjoy photoshopping and working with all those types of things, and you can make memes, you know, help us out. We'll take any help we can get. But again, like I said, don't ignore what's going on in your own state to help us. But we've got a lot of things we need to be fighting on several levels at this point in time.
Absolutely. So equalitytexas.org is your organization's website. Cool. One of the conversations that we are having today is that, you know, we really do, I don't like the idea of, you know, this is a Texas problem or a North Carolina problem. Just because we haven't seen this pop up in Florida yet, erase the state lines. You know, this is about our community. This is about humanity. Erase the national lines. This affects all of us. So one of the things that I want to impress upon our listeners today is, you know, this is not just a Texas problem. We all need to be paying attention. We all need to be involved in the fight wherever it is.
Oh, I would totally agree with that. Like I said, just, you know, get involved in your own state. There's plenty of trans organizations that are out there, or equality organizations. Find one, get involved, volunteer. I'm reading all of these things this morning. Is like you say, we're celebrating MLK Day, and our lives end when we no longer are speaking out.
Yes.
And this is what we need to do now. This is our time. We need to be able to speak out. We need to be able to have these conversations about what's really happening in our lives, and that we need, demand, and deserve respect and equality. Everybody does. And so, you know, if you're listening, even if you just retweet Trans Tuesdays, these things matter. These things cross state lines, because we're talking about who folks are. And that's what we need to be seeing is I don't like the word normalizing trans folks, but really that's what we are. We need to show people that we're out there. We're your neighbors, we're your friends, we're your coworkers. And showing people that we're here. And if you're not able to come out yourself for whatever reasons, no judgment, but there are ways to be allies. And that's what we need everybody to do, is be an ally to the community, be an ally to the movement, and find a way to share your time, talent, and treasure. Or treasure, not all of those.
Lou, thank you so much for being a part of this discussion and sharing your unique perspectives and ideas with us. I appreciate you so much.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, Lou. You too. Lou Weaver, the Transgender Programs Coordinator for Equality Texas. Our message today is that in order to effectively move the needle of progress here, we have to organize a whole lot better than we have been. What we saw happen with the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance underscores the need to erase the city, state, and county lines and stop thinking of these things as a Houston problem or a Texas problem or a Florida problem or a United States of America problem. The struggle for equality is a struggle of humanity. Let's all come together and get this law stopped before it does irreversible damage. Next, we zero in on one specific girl's struggle against an outsider political lobby machine simply to be able to pee at school like every other girl. We'd like to take a moment now to thank our generous patrons at patreon.com. These folks allow us to improve the sound quality of our program, have access to a broader range of guests, and continue to bring you stories that hopefully challenge your thoughts and open your minds. This week, we'd like to welcome Russell to the Patreon group. Thank you so much for being a part of this journey that we are on. If you appreciate conversations like the one we're having today about the landscape of transgender rights in Texas and want to help us continue to bring you stories like this, head over to patreon.com/saratalk and become a patron. Patrons receive early access to all of our episodes before they post publicly, and also patrons receive an advertisement-free listening experience. Again, a big thank you to our patrons for being so supportive of our show, and for all of you for listening to the show each week. Welcome back to Sarah Talk. Today, we are talking about transgender rights in Texas, and we've been talking broadly about state law and the proposed anti-trans legislation, Senate Bill 6. And again, we'd like to thank Lou Weaver from Equality Texas for joining us. Now, let's take a closer look at the application and implications of all of this in one specific area of our society that seems to draw out the loudest response, our schools. About 25 miles west of Austin, in Hays County, lies Dripping Springs. Even the name invokes feelings of calm and quiet. But lately, for residents, it's been anything but. The Dripping Springs Independent School District is a public district serving approximately 5,400 students from pre-K to year 12, and it is there, in Dripping Springs, where we join our next guest. Andy Hutton is one of many parents from the district who have come together in unity to support diversity and inclusion in their community and schools. Andy, welcome to Sarah Talk.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thrilled to have you on and help share the story. Give us a little overview of what's going on there in Walnut Springs.
Yeah, you bet. I've got two kids who have been in the Dripping Springs schools, I guess, since 2009. And both of my kids have gone to Walnut Springs since kindergarten. It's a fantastic place, a fantastic school with great administrators and great teachers who really work hard to address individual needs of our kids. I guess about a year ago, my son came home from school and asked me if I knew anybody who was transgender. And it came out of the blue for me. I didn't know quite where he was coming from on that. But I think it was a great teachable moment for me and my son. We had a great conversation about all of the different varieties of children in the school and how to approach everybody with kindness and respect and to acknowledge differences and learn from differences. And I think it was a good moment for us. I mean, my son was he was in third grade at the time, he's in fourth grade now. But that was kind of the last I heard of it. He told me that, you know, there was a transgender child who had at Walnut Springs who had gone to school there since kindergarten, had been transitioning for some time. I mean, this isn't the words he used, but come to understand it later. But had been transitioning over a period of years to the point where now she asks that people refer to her by a female name, have a female pronouns. All her classmates and her teachers and her administrators all do that now. And so I was kind of I was encouraged by the fact that the school had been so supportive. I guess what happened was as she had been transitioning, she had asked to start using a faculty restroom. She obviously wasn't comfortable using a boys' restroom. So she started using the faculty restroom at her request and had been doing that for a couple of years. And then immediately before the beginning of this school year, she asked the administrators if she could start using the girls' restroom. And we don't have in Dripping Springs any specific policies, I guess, that address a transgender bathroom access issue. But what the school does for all student accommodations is they address these kind of on a case by case basis. They look at, you know, the age of the kids, the nature of the facilities, et cetera, et cetera. And they go through just a fact specific approach on making decisions. So in this case, I mean, there was really no, they granted her the accommodation that she requested and she started using the girls' restroom at the beginning of the school year. And that, I think, went off without incident for about a month. Then obviously I assume some discussions started happening at home, with some children telling their parents, and the parents had a negative reaction. Not all parents, obviously, but a small handful of parents had a negative reaction.
Right.
And within a matter of a couple of days, it went elevated from these parents raising their objections with the principal to raising it with the superintendent to them saying they were going to take it in front of the school board, which coincidentally just happened to have their monthly meeting the following Monday. So this all came to a boil, I guess, on about a Thursday or a Friday before this Monday meeting. And what concerned me was less, frankly, this handful of parents who had voiced objections. I understand that there was a level of non-understanding or just something different and new that they hadn't been exposed to before, and there was a need for a bit of education among these parents. But the problem was somebody in that group had reached out to a lobbying group here in Texas called Texas Values. And they are really just, I mean, if you look at their website or look at their Facebook page, it really is their entire purpose for being is seems to be anti-LGBTQ rights. And they immediately got involved, and in that couple of day run-up period for the school board meeting, their executive director was involved with the discussions with the superintendent. And then they made an appearance at the school board meeting the following Monday.
Wow.
Now, for those of us who were parents in the school, we were really concerned about a political group out of Austin getting engaged in our schools. I think they were my biggest concern was just the fact that they immediately came out and their talking point seemed to be there's a safety issue going on in Dripping Springs because they are sneaking in through the back door an agenda to advance transgender rights. And they saw this as not an educational accommodation for individual students who was totally justified in the accommodation. They saw it as, or they're presenting it as an attack on Texas public schools by a bunch of radical liberal school administrators.
As we so often hear.
Which is obviously how you would always picture Central Texas school districts, right? we're a small school district in Central Texas. You know, we got one high school, one middle school, three elementary schools. It's a place that is in a lot of ways. I mean, we're adjacent to Austin, which probably is most people think of as this little beacon of blue in a very red state.
Mm-hmm.
Dripping Springs is quite a mix, I think, of politics and experiences, and you probably hear all stripes of the political spectrum represented here. It's certainly not a boundary pusher in a lot of respects, but we care about our kids and we want to see them thrive, and we're going to do what we can to help them thrive. And that's been the mission of the school district and our teachers for a long time, and they've done a great job with it. And they're not going to make any exceptions for helping kids achieve their maximum potential based on, you know, whether they're gay, straight, transgender, religious, atheist, whatever the case may be, they will help a kid achieve what they're capable of achieving. And this was one of those things. This was one of those things that contributed to a child's confidence and helped them live out their identity, and so we were very proud of the way they handled that. So Texas Values went to school a bit on us, I think largely because what Texas has, and I'm sure you talked about this a bit with Equality Texas, but we've got a legislative session that happens every 2 years, and it just so happens that this issue came up in Dripping Springs about 3 months before the legislature went back into session.
Mm-hmm.
And our own, our lieutenant governor has been making noise for a couple of years about passing a North Carolina style bathroom bill here.
Yes.
So I think that this is my speculation, but I, given the timing and the way they invited the media to the school board meeting, I felt like they were using us and our district in Dripping Springs as a means to push their political agenda and kick it off in the legislature, you know, without regard to the needs of the individual kids or the teachers who know our kids. And that bothered a lot of us as parents. So we got a group very quickly tried to pull together just some friends to go to the school board meeting and stand up and support our principal and our superintendent and the board in the decisions that they had made. And it turned into quite an event at that first school board meeting.
Yeah, I listened to that audio. Yeah.
Okay. And it was, I mean, it was a long, long evening of discussion. Mm-hmm. So it's continued. And it seems to have shifted now from our school board to our legislature as, this is now achieved really a full boil. What we have done is transition kind of our parents group from, we continue to be really engaged in the school board, and in discussions in our community, but also now, contacting our legislators, mm-hmm. our state rep, our state senator, one of whom has already appeared in a press conference with Texas Values. And that was disheartening for us, but, means gives us a lot more motivation to continue to push and try to educate about the story that is happening in Dripping Springs, because I think telling these stories is critical to starting to see a bit of change in Texas generally. And I've seen it. What's exciting to me is that as hard as this conversation has been, there's been a real opportunity to have conversations with our neighbors about what is actually happening in school and not the transgender boogeyman that
yes.
Texas Values, that they like to tell the story about somebody lurking in a bathroom, waiting to, I don't know, do what, but usually they seem to be conflated with sexual predators.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to tell the story of this third grader in Walnut Springs, and this is the reality of really where this issue, where the rubber meets the road, telling that story has changed minds, and I've seen it happen over the last 3 months, where people's, you can't reason your way through people's prejudices. They're going to continue to hold those, but these stories have a way of kind of expanding people's worldview and making their heart bigger. When we're talking about a real life third grader rather than in the abstract and in a political debate, I think we've done a lot of good as far as that goes. It's just being able to have that conversation and tell that narrative instead of the one that Dan Patrick likes to tell.
Right. And I think it's, I want to stop and make sure that we draw a very large red circle around the fact that this is really an outsider political lobby group who has turned a third grader's struggle into a political football and dragged that family into the public sphere that, they didn't ask for this. This was forced upon them. And I want to make sure that we make that distinction.
That's absolutely right. The family involved is actually very private. They never asked for any of this. Mm-hmm. They asked for a private accommodation for their child. And it really was nobody else's concern. There are people who are uncomfortable. I understand that from the point of view that this is something they're just not used to. But the school actually did make an accommodation even for the people who are uncomfortable by allowing those kids to use a bathroom that was immediately adjacent. And that's a small number of kids. Most of these kids, they're good friends with this child. They know the child. They love her. They play together. She's just like any other kid in the school. It's the parents who have the misgivings, not the children. And I feel, these kids are obviously more educated on this issue than their parents.
Right.
Which is saying something when you're these are elementary kids. But obviously, I mean, as frequently happens, kids are a lot more accepting and open-minded and willing to roll with any differences that they may have than parents are. So we can learn a lot from our kids, I guess is the point.
Absolutely. If you don't mind a little thought exercise, I want to kind of walk through some of the more common arguments that we hear. And again, in this case, the principal of the school made a private decision with this family. And the superintendent, Dr. Gehring, has also been incredibly supportive of the family and continues to speak about his focus on safety. He said this isn't a board level issue and they are handling things, like you said, on a case by case basis. But some parents in opposition are arguing that they should have been notified and that there was children were read some book about understanding and acceptance of trans individuals, again, without notification or parental consent. Let's talk about that. Do other parents have a right of some sort of notification?
No, I mean, that's an argument we've had to bat down several times. Obviously, there are a number of student privacy laws on the books, and nobody expects their own child's accommodations to be made public for everybody to know about. No matter what the accommodation is, whether you're dyslexic or you've got particular needs in the classroom where you need an extra 10 minutes on a test, there's no reason you need to be notified of another child's accommodations, I don't think. Particularly when there's really the only reason their argument about notification is because they think or they assume that there is some sort of safety issue that they need to know about. I mean, it's not about I just want to know. It's because they're scared. You know, it ultimately comes down to a fear.
Right.
That by making these accommodations, they're somehow putting children at risk, which obviously is not true. There's absolutely no basis for that.
Right. And that leads into kind of my next thought with, and this one was from directly from Texas Values. They said, we feel like the privacy and dignity of our children has been violated. And Eric Phillips, a parent of two girls at the school, when addressing the board, said, quote, "You hear about the discomforts of transgender students, but what about the girls being exposed?" And now this is pretty common, and I can't help but think, you know, I have a 6-year-old first grader, and I'm an approved school volunteer. I take these kids on field trips. Exposed to what?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on that they assume is happening in these bathrooms. I mean, if you're in any elementary school bathroom, you walk around and you see a class maybe where the teacher takes them down and makes a bathroom stop, and these kids are running everywhere, yeah, in and out of bathrooms. It's chaos,
yes,
right? I don't know kind of what reality they think is happening in a third grade bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But people, any kids, I mean, leaving aside any kind of transgender issues, kids are running in and out of the incorrect bathroom all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no safe issue. There is no kind of malicious intent. People just go in to pee. Obviously this isn't about bathrooms.
Right.
It's about fear. It's about, you know, it's no more about bathrooms than, you know, we're talking on Martin Luther King Day than water fountains. It was about water fountains,
exactly,
in the 1960s for civil rights movement. But this is where the sort of flashpoint where you've seen it come up, and it's again, I think they have certain misconceptions about, and I don't know where it comes from, but again, it's mm-hmm. just irrational fear, I think, as to what happens in bathrooms, that there are kids exposing themselves and everything else. And if there are kids exposing themselves in bathrooms, that's a whole other issue.
Right.
And we need to talk about it. But it's not this issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly not this child. I think a lot of the reason folks have gotten so involved is because this is a small school district. And a lot of people know this family and know this child. And the fact that these myths are being spread about suggesting that she is some kind of safety risk
mm-hmm.
hurts a lot of people, and people want to go to bat for her. They see a child being bullied by an outside political group and using her to advance the ends that they want to achieve, and people are offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is a kid. You know, it's not. It's a third grade kid who's 9 years old now. It's not a cause. It's, you know, as yep. far as them blowing it up into something that it's not, this is a child who needs attention and help and support and, you know, I'll be damned if they're going to come into Dripping Springs and, you know, hurt one of our children. There's a large group of parents, you know, sort of mama bears and papa bears mm-hmm. who are willing to stand up and stand between this group and this child. We're not going to let them lay a finger on her.
Yeah, you talk about things that offend people. I'll tell you what offends me. And this is comes directly from the Republican State Representative Jason Isaac. Quote, what it boils down to is the safety of our students and the safety of women throughout the state. I stand behind the parents and Texas values about concerns of women's safety. End quote. I wonder, rather facetiously, would he be making the same statement about a transgender boy? Would he be so concerned for the safety of men if this were a female to male trans person? How do you respond to the argument about that women and girls are weaklings that need to be protected by the big, strong men?
Yeah, it's pretty offensive. I'd heard rumors before the bill was actually written that they were going to write it exclusively for women's bathrooms.
Yeah.
That didn't happen. They've spread it out, but that was the logic that came up. I'd heard through a couple of press conferences, that Dan Patrick gave before the bill was actually publicly released, about, you know, protecting women, and it was going to be called the Women's Privacy Protection Act or something like that.
Right.
And the logic was because men can defend themselves in the bathroom. Again, you know, using this sort of trans boogeyman as the thing that everybody needed to protect against or be protected against. What I have seen change, though, a bit over time as we've had this conversation, is that the focus, they're on the defensive, the Dan Patricks of the world, where the more we talk about this, the more they understand that they don't have anything to back up a safety argument anymore. It takes having that conversation where, at least in Dripping Springs, that's where they started. But over the last 3 months, the conversation has shifted back to their own anxieties and insecurities, where they are saying, we're just not comfortable. Okay, you know, we can talk about your discomfort.
Yeah.
And you know, how to address that. But just that shift in conversation from, this is a safety threat to my child if you allow this, you know, quote unquote policy to move forward, to, I just don't know how I feel. You know, this is a privacy issue. I'm just used to going into bathrooms where, you know, multi occupancy kind of bathrooms where I think, obviously this is a totally flawed logic too, because
yeah.
transgender people have been using the bathroom for years and nobody even notices.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they know somebody is there, they're put out by it. And so they just generally feel this discomfort of using the restroom with somebody who may have had a different, you know, assigned sex at birth. So, but having that conversation shift, I feel like we're making progress. You know, it's not, they know they can't make the safety argument about this third grader because there's no basis for it at all. Just like there's, you know, at a broader level on a, there's no basis to make it about any transgender men or women as a general matter. But when we're talking about it specifically in Dripping Springs and this third grader, they can't do it. So they, what do they fall back on? And it's just this generalized privacy and dignity argument, which I'm not even sure what that means.
Right.
That seems to be where they've gone. And even though they pay lip service to the safety angle at a statewide debate level, we seem to have left that behind a bit in Dripping Springs, just because we've had the conversation now for 3 months and they're back in the corner every time we talk about it because they know they can't accuse this child of being a safety risk.
There's nothing to substantiate that with.
Absolutely not. This is a child who's been in the school for 4 years, and is a fantastic kid, who is, amazingly confident and full of life and joy and is thriving in school. And, the people who know her just like any, I mean, this is about overcoming prejudices and presumptions, and shifting it back to real people, and real stories. And when we do that, a lot of that fear, I think, you know, I have a lot of optimism that a lot of that fear melts away when people actually know who's involved. And that's why, again, it's so important to tell stories and be visible. And you know, here I am, I'm saying this as, I'm totally aware that I'm saying this as a straight, white, cisgendered guy who lives in the suburbs. So it's real easy for me to say, but I've seen that make a difference as far as in our community, people who were fearful for, initially have really come a long way when they see how this plays out in real life.
Yes.
in a real school. And it's, I think, made a difference in sort of setting this up, as the debate happens in Austin. And people who used to be, who you would have asked back in September when this was first raised would have been absolutely opposed to the school's, decisions, now either are fine with it and understand it, or at least are on the fence about it. And it's been that just having that subtle move back to sort of a place that we can talk about it, and they're not just coming at it from a place of complete fear, is pretty big, I think, in a town like Dripping Springs, a small Texas town like Dripping. And I'm sorry, I kind of I keep talking over you.
No, absolutely.
This is something
I
care about a lot.
Yeah.
I've been, you know, it's just, as a dad, it's been something that's really consumed me over the last 3 months. As I've gotten more and more deeply involved, and you know, for me, I it's been an educational process for me. I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, which is one of the most conservative towns you'd ever visit in your life. I was, you know, I was a theater guy. I had lots of probably LGB friends, mm-hmm. but the T part of it was new to me too. I didn't really know a lot of transgender individuals, over the years, occasionally I'd meet a person or two, but I couldn't really count any among my friends, like I could the rest of the acronym. So it all seemed very far away to me when the debate was happening in North Carolina. And then when it came up in our town, and I was able to meet this child, and you know, but everybody immediately falls in love with her because she's so fantastic, and you want to defend her. I've done a lot of educating of myself about this issue, and met some trans women who live in Dripping Springs who I didn't know before, and it's been a fantastic experience for me too,
and awesome.
Mind expanding.
Yeah.
And the same has been true with a lot of other people, who I think with that increased visibility and learning those stories, they want to step in and help. And what that's resulted in is a really large group of Dripping Springs people who really want to be involved and engaged in this debate that's going on in Austin, because it affects our school. They're doing it because of our school in a way. And we were cited in Dan Patrick's holiday email out to his supporters that we needed this bill because Dripping Springs Independent School District is taking these steps that are just unacceptable. And we're ready to push back on that. So it's been exciting in some ways that to see people change and to see the effects that these conversation and education can have on our neighbors. It's been discouraging at times too, to hear our elected officials talk the way they have from a place of what seems like ignorance and fear. But I do think there's a chance, a real opportunity for education, and for people to grow out of this. And that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah. That's very encouraging to me to hear, because when you look from the outside in, you see what you're allowed to see. Right. And so I was wondering if there were, you know, some real heartfelt, life-changing conversations happening, or if people were just kind of screaming into the void at each other. But it sounds like that the conversations have been very helpful. And I'd like to make one other comment about allyship. And that's to say, I have these conversations too with my friends of color. And, you know, there's one set of conversation that I can have as a trans person. I can go out into the world and say, hey, I'm a trans person. Here's what you need to know about me. Here's what I'd like you to know about trans people. Here's how we need your help. But there's a whole other component of that conversation when cisgender people come out and say, hey, I know that you hear this trans person screaming like crazy, but I know that person. Or I know a trans person, and they're just like us. And so, you know, I think you have to have both of those voices in the conversation. And so if I can encourage people to be those vocal allies, there are so many trans people who can't be out, who can't stand up for themselves and say, hey, this is what we need. You know, they're hiding their identities for family or religion or whatever. And so the more voices we have in the conversation, the better, I guess, is the point to that.
I agree. Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. And it certainly is the case with this child. I mean, she can't have a voice. She can't really speak up for herself. I mean, she's nine. So having the group of parents who have surrounded her with, you know, just this great, compassionate, loving community, and having just those consistent conversations with our neighbors about, and bringing it back to the real person at the middle of it, rather than going off into crazy, slippery slope arguments where the other side usually likes to take this, has been, I think, very helpful. And I hope that I think it has. I mean, obviously most of the people who are talking about this, are not trans, as far as the group in Texas. We've got a lot of people who are engaged, who are just who are allies and want to help and want to be involved, who see injustice being done and want to stand up to it. You know, particularly in the wake of the election, I think people want to do something. And that's another silver lining that may come from these difficult political arguments. People want to stand up and do something and do the right thing. And so I feel like we're getting a lot more people in Texas who are doing just that, who maybe wouldn't have been engaged before, who would have just kind of watched it on the news and maybe cursed under their breath that these bad things were happening in the world and they weren't going to do anything about it though, other than maybe talk to like-minded people. Now they're talking to people who they might disagree with, and having those hard conversations. And that's what changes minds, is when people who are friends who may have a different view, but respect from first person, I have had these conversations, where people had no idea maybe where I stood on LGBT rights. But you know, they were neighbors, were friends, they respected me, and maybe they have a different view. And after we have that talk and they can see that other side of things, that's what it takes. You know, we can't be shouting into the void and we can't just be talking to each other, you know, people we already agree with.
Yes.
We can't pull back into our little insular groups. We have to talk to each other. And that's what I think is happening now in Dripping Springs. And that's where we've made most of the progress.
You know, speaking of difficult conversations, and I don't want to fall in the rabbit hole here, but most of us here on Sarah Talk are somewhere in the secular humanist atheist camp. And from that particular mm-hmm. perspective, it seems like all of these equal rights struggles always somehow find their way pointing back to religion, whether it's women's rights or slavery and segregation or marriage equality or now trans rights. It seems to always be this specific brand of a hyper-conservative Christian, not all Christians, but this hyper-conservative on the front lines that hold back progress. Pew Research states 77% of Texans identify themselves to be Christian, and within that, the largest group is evangelical Protestant. Is that something in these conversations that you've noticed come up in your own community? Is there, you know, is there a divide between a conservative and a liberal brand of Christianity in regards to this specific issue? Has that been even a part of the conversation?
Sure. Yes, it has come up. I'll say from my own perspective, I'm an elder in the Dripping Springs Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm involved in my church, and there are a number of people in our group who go to church with me, and I have been really gratified the fact that I think I was almost surprised at the number of people who in my church who came out and spoke in support of what we were doing, to help this child. And it was really encouraging, because what I see regularly is my faith being hijacked by other groups for political ends.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really, that's always bothered me. I mean, again, I grew up in Lubbock, Texas, which is the kind of sort of Christian conservative I think you were describing.
Okay.
That probably fits very well.
A little more firebrand.
What I remember. Yeah. Real firebrand mm-hmm. type, fire and brimstone, you know, you follow rules to get to heaven mm-hmm. kind of thing, as opposed to just seeing the face of God in every person you encounter, which is what I'd rather, talk about. But, in any event, there has been that conversation in our community too. It's, I think, harder for them. They've started using buzzwords that, I think are sort of stand, a symbol, when instead of saying faith, they say, you know, our values don't correspond right. with the school's actions. It's hard because obviously whenever you're talking about issues of faith, you can't reason through faith. I mean, that's what, right? Well, that's what faith is.
Right.
It's not a sort of set of logical, it's supposed to describe kind of the why rather than the what, but they will, again, kind of conflate all those things together and say, well, you know, this is what I believe as part of my faith. And then what do you do with that? Because you can't reason them back to, well, this is what makes sense. There's no harm in doing, taking this approach with, for instance, bathrooms at Walnut Springs Elementary School. Mm-hmm. But they just come back and dig in with, well, I can't believe in that because of my faith.
Right.
And it seems to me just kind of sort of a last ditch. You're never going to convince me because I believe it as a matter of faith. And I, as you know, as a Christian myself, I mean, obviously I'm part of a sort of a mainline Christian church rather than an evangelical tradition, but that really bothers me where you are able to you take shelter in any kind of productive conversation about individual rights and what it means in our society and kind of the way secular laws should be written by saying, just retreating into a place that you don't have to wrestle with your own prejudices and your ideas because it's just something you believe in internally and you know, you're never going to be think otherwise. You know, we have to be challenged. I mean, it should be about asking questions. It's always about asking questions. It's true whether you're lawmaking or whether you are an elder in a church. You should be asking yourself questions about why you're doing what you're doing and whether that's fair to other people. And, you know, are you doing it from a place of grace, compassion, and love, or are you doing it from a place of fear and fire and brimstone?
Definitely.
And I would hope that most Christians would say, they're able to defend it by saying, I'm doing this because of grace, compassion, and love. I mean, that's the tradition I come from. If you're not doing it from that place, I think you need to reevaluate what your faith tradition is, honestly. Because I think it's indefensible to say we're just not comfortable with it. And therefore you can't have it. You can't have these particular rights when there's no rational or logical basis for that position.
Right. Well, like we saw with marriage equality, right? Well, the old book says that,
sure,
that man shall not lie with man. Fine. The new book says Jesus says to love everybody. So get off it already. You know? And
right,
again,
right,
to your point, if you can even look beyond that and say, you know, I want to believe in a God who would love people equally, the book be damned. But that's what if I were a believer, that's what I would want. I would want a God who loves everyone. And so that's what I'm going to go with.
Right, right. You're not going to make it. I think you always should err on the side of grace and love.
Yes.
You know, it's not, if there's any question, and there's a gray area, just be compassionate, you know, try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. You know, just love one another. And I think then you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
To some extent, being able to have that conversation, you know, as somebody who comes from a faith tradition myself, with other people who may be evangelical and different, and have a different perspective on me, reminding them of those thoughts is valuable.
Right.
So,
well, we're down the rabbit hole now, so we'll climb back out.
Yeah,
but I appreciate you, you know, being willing to explore some of those ideas. Let's turn it back. Let's talk a little bit about Many Stripes, One Tiger, which I think is just fantastic. Tell us about how that formed.
Well, it started back in September when this conversation started happening in Dripping Springs, and sitting in the school board meeting, a friend of mine was kind of doodling, and she sketched out this logo, that this Many Stripes, One Tiger logo, and you know, the tiger is the mascot of the Dripping Springs High School. So we were trying to find a way to both show that we were rallying around our school, but also showing sort of the inclusive and diverse community that we come from. You know, there are many stripes on this tiger, but we're still kind of all part of the body of the school district. And it takes all of us to make this work. So, part of it was intentional, because I think early on there was a group that wanted to wave a lot of rainbow flags, and there was logos that had like a rainbow paw print, which I thought were fantastic and creative and wonderful. But in a place like Central Texas, if you start waving rainbow flags sometimes, right, it's like waving the red tape, you know.
And you have open you have open carry laws too, right? So that's there's a danger,
right,
there.
If there's a danger, but there's also it brings a lot of baggage to a lot of people in rural Texas, and assumptions that that don't necessarily need to be there. So we formed this group, and we called ourselves Many Stripes, One Tiger, and it has grown into a Facebook group of over 800 people. And we've had, a letter campaign to the school board and our legislators. We're meeting in groups about what we can do to meet with our reps ahead of the SB6 and in the before debate starts on the floor of the legislature and committee. We hope to be involved in the committee hearings, to be able to testify to our opposition to the bill. And of course, we continue to come and stand up in every school board meeting, to make sure that the kind of misrepresentations that Texas Values has consistently made over the last 3 to 4 months, aren't made without somebody there to speak truth into them, because most of the time they're well off base in their facts, in particular the facts that have happened at Walnut Springs. There's just been outright lies about the family and about the school. Wow. that we're always there to try to correct. So yeah, it's been a great group, and it's full of great parents, and just community members, and has been a really wonderful thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
Met a lot of people, a lot of great people who've been willing to, spend their time, on this issue that, I don't think they knew what the kind of commitment they would be making when they first got involved, but they leave in it. And it's been really heartwarming to see.
That's awesome. Yeah, it looked like a very diverse group of people. We've talked on the show a number of times, of course, about the Obama administration's non-binding advice to schools, their interpretation of Title IX, of the education amendments, that, you know, the gender identity is protected within the class of sex. And I think, unfortunately, I think many people expect that all of that will be reversed in the New World Order. But what's next for Dripping Springs? Are you guys looking at, you know, is this Texas Values Group going to try to push this to court somehow? Or, you know, how does that fit into the greater landscape there in the area?
Well, I don't know what their strategy is exactly. We've been on defense the entire time because obviously in Dripping, they've been supportive of the child and the family. So for us, it has been just batting down the bad ideas that get thrown up by by Texas values and their supporters as far as what they want, and the only thing they would be happy with is a rollback of these accommodations for this student. And so they've tried to do that at the school board level, which is generally the shutdown, and now they're trying to do it at the legislative level. And again, I don't think Dripping Springs ever specifically abided by the Department of Education's guidance letter. They continue to approach this on a case by case basis in light of what happened in Fort Worth, when our attorney general got involved up there. And Texas Values was perfectly fine with the case by case approach that was announced in Fort Worth. But as soon as it gets put into practice where, you know, case by case means a child should be able to access the bathroom that aligns with their gender identity, they're obviously not fine with that. And suddenly they don't like case by case at all. So we continue to just defend the child. So what's next for us is just we're going to be here to make sure that this child gets the accommodations that she needs. And as long as they continue to fight it, we'll continue to be there and defend the school and the child against those attacks.
So what can our listeners do to help? We'll send people to the Facebook group, Many Stripes, One Tiger, and we'll put up links to that in the Twitter account. You know, this community has been thrust into the national spotlight without asking for it. Or, you know, what are some ways that we can encourage people to be allies for this student?
I would say, for folks, particularly who live here in Texas, that we need everybody's voices as far as talking to their legislators, and that means calls and meetings. I mean, emails and stuff help too, but I think really that personal touch, the people telling their own stories about why they're involved in this movement and this struggle, telling those to their legislators make a huge difference. That's all we're trying to do. We're parents in Dripping Springs, Texas. We're not often on the front lines of this, but we found ourselves there thanks to these other outside groups making us into a political issue. And I hope that everybody who would listen to this and hear our story would do in kind and tell their story and why they want to help, and talk to their neighbors, even the ones who don't necessarily agree with them, and make sure that what I think Dan Patrick wants to dismiss us as a fringe group of sort of left-leaning liberals, which isn't true, because there's a lot of people who are part of our group who are Republican voting conservatives, but love and respect and believe in this child, and their minds have been broadened because of it. Those kind of stories need to be told, just so we can't be pigeonholed or marginalized as some kind of fringe outside group, because we're not. We're Dripping Springs, Texas, and we are doing what we think is right by this kid and by our school, and everybody needs to do that. That's a longer and not very eloquent answer to your question, but that's what I think is ultimately comes down to, is just telling stories.
Yes.
Especially if you live here in Texas.
Well, and that's exactly why we started this podcast. You know, I wanted to share my own story of transition, and the idea, if we helped one person, then it was worth all of the effort that it takes to make this thing happen every week. And again, we'll put some links up to your group on, and this is episode number 38, and we'll encourage everyone, you know, to support the school and the parents and the student any way we can. If there's one message that I could send back out to this brave student, the school district and the community, it's that you are not alone. There are many more stripes on this tiger than you even know. We're all out here pushing for you.
I like that. Appreciate it, Sarah.
Andy, thank you for being a part of the program today, for standing up for equality in a time and place when it's not always easy to do so, and being a great outspoken ally and advocate for this student. and for the community. I appreciate you very much.
I appreciate you too. Thanks, Sarah.
Before we close out the show today, I'd like to share a clip of Kimberly Shapley, mother of a transgender child from Pearland, Texas, a southern suburb of Houston, speaking at a press conference after the discriminatory bill was filed in the Senate, and a story she shared about her own daughter.
They talk about the danger in the restrooms. The real danger is sending this child into a men's restroom. That's real danger, not fictitious danger that fear has invented. My daughter is singled out every time she has to use a nurse's restroom instead of the girls' restroom at school. My daughter needed to potty, and the nurse wasn't in her office, and the door was locked. The story that I got from my crying daughter at home was that she was very embarrassed, and she was very sad, because she peed herself, and she peed on the floor, and people witnessed that. I'm asking you again to find your empathy.
Occasionally, when I'm not crying for children like the ones we've learned about today, when I'm not working to mobilize and inspire you all to get involved and make a difference, I think about things existentially. And perhaps we can explore these thoughts on a future show, but isn't it absurd that we treat the arrangement of cells between our legs with such reverence in the first place? I wonder, if we didn't have the social construct of private parts at all, how might our society have developed differently? What might that be like? Imagine a humanity where penises and vaginas are treated no differently than ears or eyebrows or elbows. Imagine a world that doesn't divide us into teams based on the parts we have. Imagine if children weren't taught from birth that their parts have predetermined their available skill sets, dictate their socialization, appropriate jobs, pay, or hobbies. Our entire role in society is centered around one set of organs. Ask yourselves, why? Many thanks again to our guests today, Lou Weaver, the Transgender Programs Coordinator for Equality Texas, and Andy Hutton, parent and fighting tiger from Dripping Springs, Texas. Please join us in these efforts and support Texas in any way you are able. Again, we must fight discrimination in all its forms, wherever it forms. You've been listening to Sarah Talk.
Sarah Talk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/SarahTalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@SarahTalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/SarahTalkRadio and on Twitter @SarahTalkRadio. Sarah Talk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.